And remember that jackass in New England was trying to get Belichick? He's like, so what does this mean? Like, could Garoppolo be the guy? And Belichick just gave him the biggest death stare and didn't even give him a word. He just, like, grunted and moved on to the next question. Because he was so disgusted with the idea that this idiot would suggest that Jimmy Garoppolo should actually usurp the quarterback position in New England and punt Tom Brady to the curb.
That's possible.
That is the most recent absurd example. The Tekarski and Price one is a great one.
Yeah.
And I guess you could argue Matthews to an extent, but there's 12 forwards.
No, but it's easy to take the 12th guy out. Yeah, we're having fun with it.
Right. He's playing tomorrow night, I have to believe.
Yes.
In the end, maybe this is in the best interest of all parties involved because you gave him basically a week off.
Exactly.
You know, if you're comfortable with where you're at, it's not like he gets overplayed, though. He's not like Kopitar or McDavid or Sid.
26 or 27 ever a night, but
never.
That speaks to the depth, and it also speaks to kind of how effective he is at playing.
Absolutely. Per minute, this guy's putting up stats that might be the best in the league.
So that's kind of, I mean, they go hand in hand. He doesn't have to roll out for 25 minutes a night because Babcock can go to Kadri. He can go to Bozak. He can go to other players, and you're not going to get Matthews-type play, but I think Babcock knows how much he can get out of Matthews. And don't be shy, especially as the season starts to get on. You can double shift him.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's imperative that you do that later in the season, and imperative once you get into the playoffs especially. I mean, I understand the philosophy of Babcock, and I think it's one that can be frustrating in the moment, but I give him credit for being diligent in terms of sticking to it long term.
He's got his ways, and it's just going to be, this guy's getting this much ice time, this guy's going to be on the power play, Ron Hainsey's going to play 2 minutes on the power or the penalty kill. A couple years ago, it was Morgan Riley's not going to play 1 second of power play time.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, okay, man.
But he sticks to the plan. I mean, this is not a guy who's rolling in every day and rolling the dice. Yeah, like, where am I going to go today? Yeah. Maybe tonight this guy's going to play 28 minutes. And then
because
tomorrow,
he's Mike Babcock and he thinks that everything he comes up with is the greatest thing on earth. And
okay,
I'm sorry, Ron Hainsey playing every second of a penalty kill?
That's fine, but I would rather a confident guy than some flimsy goon.
You play defense. How do you play 2 minutes?
Okay, that's a very specific topic. Like, that's a specific situation. I'm talking big picture. Yeah. Babcock has a philosophy here where I will take that over the guy who rolls into the rink. And
I agree.
You have no idea what the hell he's going to do every single night.
You have a strict routine where you go right in, wrist deep, in the Mugu guy.
No, I'm anti-Mugu guy pan. Here's Ray on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. What's up, Ray?
I was like, wrist deep. Where the hell is he going? Oh, back to the Mugu guy pan.
The Mugu guy pan.
Well, that's
this is something, you know, because I'm not on all the time. I didn't realize the start of the conversation was you didn't even know what the hell it was.
Yeah. Mugu guy pan?
Yes.
No, I don't know what Mugu guy pan is.
Like, that's the best part of it now.
Is there actually pan on the end of it? Or is it just on a pan?
No, it's a pan. It's
Mugu
pan.
Guy pan. I don't know, dude. I've never had it either. I just know it sounds very Chinese. Like, it's a very authentic Chinese dish.
Ray, have you ever had Mugu guy pan?
Probably, but it would have been at 2:30 in the morning, and I don't really remember it.
There's nothing better than Chinese food at like 3 in the morning.
See, Calgary, this is one thing about Calgary. They've got a place called Singapore Sam's that is open till 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So cowboys are let out at 2:30. You'd roll to Singapore Sam's. It's like an after bar.
It's the best, isn't it?
You just get noodles and wings. There was a place in Guelph called Sun Sun.
Sun Sun?
It was amazing.
Well, yeah, man. That's Spadina in Toronto. You go down Spadina at 3 on a Saturday night, it's like the Vegas Strip.
I know.
It's just booze bags looking for Chinese food.
I went at
the World Juniors, Kevin Pratt, who's one of our guys there. He's like, you got to come to, I forget the name of the place, like, you got to come to my place. So we go in there to, I don't even know when the last time anybody put a paintbrush in the place or when a new table was in there, but they walk in and everybody's like, Kevin, it's like Norm from Cheers. and he's like, let me order. He goes, I know what to order. I don't even know what I eat, but it was really really good at the moment. But it was like, you're right, there was like a million places. He's like, no, not that one, it's this one over here. He's like, oh, okay. But he had his place. Everybody's got their favorite Chinese place, man.
I do find that's uniquely Chinese, having people order for you. You don't walk into McDonald's and a guy's like, hold up, he'll have a Big Mac. Like, you don't do that. It's only Chinese where other people order for you.
I don't mind.
I think it would be the fact is we don't even really, like, do you even really know?
No.
And so some guy could order Mugu Gai Pan or something else, and you're like, eh, sure, I'll try it.
Yeah.
Why not?
I'll tell you what, you can't go wrong with an old school chicken ball and that red sauce.
That's right. That's the sweet and sour sauce.
The best.
That's where I was just going to say, I always order for myself because I don't know what's going on. So I want rice and chicken balls with the sauce on the side. Mm-hmm. That's how I work it. Mm-hmm. And then maybe some form of a beef dish. Very
General
well done.
Cow chicken.
Sometimes that red sauce, though, it can be like caulking.
It's so sticky.
So thick. You're like, what is it?
You're getting the 8 p.m. serving at 2:30 in the morning. They
warm it up with a blowtorch.
Dump it into a bowl. Some idiot will come in here later and he'll think it's just brand new for him. All right, I got a take. This is a take, and I'm quite curious to get all of your takes on this, okay?
Is it worse than Jose Theodore?
No, I think that was the worst take in the history of the show.
No, it wasn't.
That was the worst take in the history of the show. That you would rather...
No, we've been way worse
It wasn't
that.
Jose, it was Jose. He was calling him Jose Theodore.
Jose Theodore instead of Auntie Niemi. Did you see the two stops Bobrovsky has made over the past two games?
Yeah, dropping a stick. I had to break it down on SportsCenter last night.
That was Hasek-esque. I mean, that was unbelievable. This guy is another Vezina away from being a lock Hall of Famer. Lock. Absolute lock. You win three Vezinas, I don't care if the rest of the career, you have an .850 save percentage.
Eddie Mio numbers.
You are a lock. You can't... How do you not get in if you win three Vezinas? He's got two already.
Yeah.
I can't buy this lock. But
it's got to be a lock. Three Vezinas?
Three Vezinas.
Hasek had six. Did he not?
Six.
Okay, but he's like the greatest of the great.
Hasek's the greatest goaltender. In my opinion, he's the greatest goaltender who ever played. In my opinion. Now, I can't speak for people who played in the 60s, and, you know, you go back to Sawchuk and you know, Glenn Hull and everyone, like... That's just a different generation for me, and it's tough to compare generations. I'm talking in modern day, Dominik Hasek's the best goaltender I've ever laid eyes on, and to me, who's ever played the game. But that's me, personally.
I don't think you're alone in that, but that's how high he is. So he had six.
Yeah.
If Bobrovsky gets halfway to that... I
don't think it's a crazy hot take.
I don't think it is
either. Chris Osgood one day being a Hall of Famer.
Well,
Ray, he's on zero.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing, Ray. I want to put context on this because I believe that some of the players that get into the Hall of Fame, when we've put eyes onto them, we debate them. But they get better as time goes on because you start to look at their stats. So I maintain that Chris Osgood... 10 years from now, 20 years from now, will look a lot better because statistically what he's done, but we know what that team was like that he played behind, if that makes
sense. That's one of the things that's wrong with the Hall of Fame selection committee. With all due respect, how does Rogie Vachon get in 35 years after he retired? He must have been unreal in the old-timers games.
Right.
Like, there's just no way. And look, Chris Osgood won all his Stanley Cups, and I don't even know how many wins he's got.
He's got 400 wins, I think.
Yeah, he's got like a bucket load of wins, but he's not a Hall of Fame goalie. And I hate when we debate this stuff because it almost sounds like you're saying, oh, the guy's no good. That's not it. The Hall of Fame is, in my opinion, supposed to be for the great, not for the pretty good or the really good. And now they've voted in players that open up the door for a whole bunch of players that are really good, but in my mind shouldn't be Hall of Famers. I think you have a 3-year waiting period for the guys that retire, like the way it is now, and then in the next 5 years, you're either in or out. That's it.
I agree with those standards. I wouldn't force guys in. If you have a year where you don't have anyone that should be in, sorry, doors are closed. Nothing we can tell you about it. There's nothing we can do. I think that plays a part also. They feel obligated to put four different players in every single year. But you look at Bobrovsky, and I know we don't talk about him that much because of the team he plays for. His numbers since he got to Columbus are spectacular.
Insane.
They're insane.
The only thing that has held him back, and it's not, it's been injury. That's
sure.
the only thing.
But why? Like,
yeah, well, once he lost 15 lbs, he's been healthy.
He dropped 17 pounds that one summer, came back and won the Vezina.
17 pounds.
The most bizarre element of it is he came from Philadelphia.
Right. Exactly.
The team that hasn't found goaltending.
Well, they chose Steve Mason over Bobrovsky. I believe that's what the decision was at that point.
I think they got traded for one another, didn't they?
No. No, I'll have to look.
All right, maybe they weren't involved in the trade, but Mason came from Columbus to Philly,
and
Bobrovsky went from Philly to Columbus.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a swing and a miss.
Yeah, but you're right, Brian. Bobrovsky is outstanding.
I mean, we immediately say Price, Quick, Holpe. No. Bobrovsky is the man now.
But did you not? I took him. I don't know where you're at, Ray, or where you're at, O-Dog. I had him, I think, in my top 20 as far as ratings this year, rankings. But I pushed him down because I thought he wasn't going to do it again.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I thought he's kind of had hot season, cold season, hot season, cold season. So in my mind, I didn't think he would be there again this year, but he's been brilliant again.
Yeah, I don't think I had him quite that high. I'm just I get no chance of finding it, but I thought that like the guy's in the top five or seven goalies for sure.
Yeah,
like it. I don't even think that's really much of a debate. I was at a coaches conference last year and Brad Shaw was talking about defensive play, and there was this one play, and Brad's the assistant coach in Columbus, and there was this one play they broke down. It was just a train wreck in their zone. There were guys running all over the place, and Bobrovsky made an unbelievable save. And as he's talking about where the breakdown it was, he goes, and this is how you get to be a good coach.
Right.
And it was this amazing save that he made.
Yeah. Well, it
changes the whole dynamic of your team, and I mean they're a good team anyway. But Bobrovsky, he's elevating them to, if he stays at this type of level, they're a lock to make the playoffs and be a competitive team going forward.
So why the hell would he drop his stick like that, Noodles? What's the accomplishment there?
I think you get more. This is what I was talking about last. I think you get quicker as far because you don't have the drag of the stick, and not that the stick is very heavy. But it is a piece that you have to bring across, and there's more extension on the blocker. So he drops the stick and actually gets across.
It's almost like you can be better at desperation with no stick.
Right, and he's done it. Now, I would argue against Detroit, that should have been a penalty shot because he kind of threw the stick a little bit. Last night, he flat out dropped it and came across and made that sick save on Della Rose. But he knew what he was doing. That's the one thing. Like, that wasn't let me just try something. He made a conscious choice to drop his stick and get across. Now, conversely, on the pre-scout, if you ever get another opportunity, as a player, you have to have that in your mind that he's going to have full extension, but you can go five hole because he's not going to get across with stick coverage.
But you got to think at that, like, on the fly snap judgment.
You're right, but what I'm saying
is easier said than done.
If I'm doing my pre-scout, if I'm Steve Briere, the goaltender coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I walk through with an iPad before the game and I say to William Nylander, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, JVR, you talk to a lot of the forwards, hey, this is what this guy's doing on a side-to-side play. Make a mental note. A guy like Matthews will have, he has the capacity to make a snap judgment play, and that he'll find the hole. So if you drop that in his lap, that's what a good goalie coach will do, is show nuggets of a goaltender where maybe he's vulnerable in a certain position. That way they don't have to look for a hole. It's instinct. And I've seen guys do it. Great play. Ray, I'm sure you know, with pre-scouts, you used to think certain goalies used to do certain things. So if you ever got an opportunity, you wouldn't even look. You would just fire it. And, oh, I'm sure you're the same way.
I'm sure there's certain guys you wouldn't give that information to because it wouldn't matter.
Right.
Like, they,
right.
they get that close to it, they're just plunging it forward. But there are guys, like you mentioned, that might be able to take advantage of it. And but you're right. Like, there's certain guys you just kind of had a feel. If I get a chance in a certain spot, I don't even really care what he's doing, short of being outside the net. I'm going to make this move.
Right.
Like, I remember specifically one week, we were going into Philly and we had a home and home, and I got beat on two breakaways. I went to my backhand, and after the game, Glenn Healy said to me, if you go the other way, you're going to beat him. And it was Dominic Roussel that was in net.
Yep.
And I worked at practice on, because it was odd for me to go to my forehand.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if I get a chance, I'm going to go to my forehand. I didn't even look where he was, and I faked to my forehand and scored. But it was from a thought in a pre-scout that I was like, that's going to be available for me. And you're right. Like, if you're going side to side on Bobrovsky, man, he comes so fast. Maybe you can go five hole. Maybe if you had even a half a second more, you can just take it and go back across the other way, because he's got no chance. He's selling right. the farm, going left to right.
That information's kind of good before the game.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, we played in St. Louis one night. Scott Pellerin said, if you get in alone on that Turek, what was his name?
Marty? Roman Turek.
Roman Turek, that big tall guy?
Yeah.
Rip it five hole, go in every time. I had a breakaway, five hole, like just for fun.
Yeah.
I would like just a little bit of info like that. Can
but
just
the thing is, you have to have the proper pre-scout. I had a guy named Troy Loney. Do you remember it, Ray? Where you
oh, yeah.
So Troy Loney played in Pittsburgh when Yager and Lemieux were there. And I started in Pittsburgh. So he goes, Jamie, if Yager gets a breakaway on you, he goes backhand every time, poke check him with that move you do in practice. Yager gets a breakaway, I go to poke forehand. Check him. He goes forehand and goes right around me, jams it in the open net. I skate to the bench and Troy's like, I've never seen that move. Sorry about that.
Yeah, really? You've never seen that move?
I mean, you have to consider the source, too, I guess.
Well, that would be like, but asking, with all due respect to Troy, who's running a USHL team and he's done really well, asking him about how somebody's going to score would be like somebody asking me who's left-handed in a fight. I don't know. Eventually, they're all left-handed, aren't they?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the information they're looking for.
Figured if you get speed-bagged enough, you'll find a left in there at some point. Yeah.
Figured he would help me out.
Yeah.
I got nothing to add to that one. When the guys are talking, the other thing, here's a great bit of pre-scout, that we all heard. Hey, this guy doesn't like traffic. Oh, really?
What goalie does?
He's tell me the one guy that does. But every game, somebody would say, oh, crowd this guy. He doesn't like traffic. Okay, I'll get right on it.
Well, hockey cliches are the best.
Mark Bergevin would come in and say, guys, he takes the bus to the game. He doesn't like traffic. That was his comment. But you'd ask about, anyway, Patrick Waugh. He's like, yeah, takes the bus to the game. Doesn't like traffic.
Thanks, Berge.
Classic.
Great scouting report. Leafs are back in action tomorrow, and we all expect Matthews to play, and I don't think there'll be any rust. I mean, they tried to play it up like today he didn't feel himself or what. Like, come on. This guy could stop playing for 3 months and show up and light the lamp. I mean, special players have that ability. I don't expect to see any different player tomorrow night as long as he plays. I mean, I expect him to be the focal point of the offense and the best player on the team.
Well, if they're going to clear him to play, then that's what I expect. It's not the point in the year that, okay, we're gonna, you know, we're fighting for a playoff spot, so if he's in, he might be like in the playoffs where you're a guy's like 80% and you get what he can give. Like right now, if he's okay to play, I expect he's Matthews. And if they're not quite sure, or you know, it's not quite right, then he won't play. But if he's in, he's back on his, he's in his line. He's playing on the power play. He's playing the minutes that he normally plays in the role that he normally plays. I don't think anything would, to expect anything different than that.
No, exactly. And I think this can be very beneficial, long term for him to just shut it down for a week. He's played a lot of hockey over the past couple of years. They got 3 wins without him. I don't think anybody expected that, but they did. And there's an NBA angle to this, and we have this conversation every once in a while. You know, when is it going to get, when is it going to reach the NHL where these superstar players who you really, really need late in the season and into the playoffs, teams decide, you know what, this is the right time. Shut them down for a game. Shut them down for two. We can survive without him, and it will benefit him long term. I think the science is there. It's just a matter of it being accepted in the NHL.
Yeah.
Well, I you know, I'm sure the argument would be that, you know, you, the way that the teams are right now, they're so bunched together in a lot of cases, they need every point you can get, and, you know, you can't really take the chance on resting a guy. I'm sure that would be the, you know, the counterpoint. But if you're playing three games in 4 nights, and you give player X, Austin Matthews, game two off, now he's got a couple of days off. Of course he's going to feel better. He's going to feel more fresh. Why not? And in baseball, very rarely does a guy play every game, almost never. They always, you know, then they give them 12 days off, which is a couple of days a month, and they play 150 games if they're healthy. Mm-hmm. Basketball, like, they, you know, it's different. They get a big lead, and those guys come out after 30 minutes. Or you're like San Antonio, and they rest their entire team. And I'm with you. I know it's kind of like a badge of honor, but it's almost like a badge of who cares anymore. It's different. It doesn't matter. If you can get more rest, take the rest.
Well, you can spin the badge of honor the opposite way, too. They're not going to Matt Martin and saying, I think you need the night off. Like, they're going to superstar players. Like, if your team is saying, we need you so much, we don't need you tonight, that should be worn as a badge of honor. And that's the way the NBA looks at it. The superstars and the best teams are like, what do I have to prove in November?
Last year, LeBron and Kyrie, you're not going to Memphis.
Fine. Catch me in June when I'm back in the NBA Finals. That's when I'm really...
Just think of what you'd have to sell, like in theory, to both the players and the fans. Because like everything in hockey, hockey's a decade behind. And so it would be such a out of the norm, you'd have to sell it about why it's happening, why you're doing it, what the benefits are you think they're going to be. And there would be a lot of pushback for sure.
Oh yeah.
But I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. Hell, who knows that Toronto's not doing that right now with Matthews? That you know, he is banged up, and, you know, we'll just give him another couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Why not?
Well, how would you know? Exactly. If they're telling you it's just standard procedure, he's banged up. They don't tell you what the injury is anyway, so what do we really know to begin with? You don't.
Well, maybe he just took one of O's Fridays.
Yes, a personal day.
Took a personal day.
He needed a personal day.
It's just called a day off. It doesn't need to be called a personal day. I had to open the chalet.
Hey, last thing before you go. They made a decision. They signed a guy who was afraid of bears instead of Bobrovsky.
Ilya Bryzgalov.
Oh. Yes.
Yes. That's Philly
you know what?
We're talking
that
about.
That came from the owner. He told them, and I've been told this, get me a free agent goalie. And the management team said the only one out there that fits is Bryzgalov. And he's like, yeah, good. That's the guy.
Pay them
9 years, 51 bones, and 3 years later out the door because, you know, it was the first time.
Yeah.
We got to fly, buddy, but I've been asked on Twitter next week, next Wednesday, do a yes Mugu guy or no Mugu guy.
We might have to do some research on Mugu.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll get after it, man.
Yes Mugu guy, no Mugu guy.
Okay. It's in.
All right,
chalk it in. Who's in charge of keeping track of that stuff?
Nobody is.
No,
forget about it anyway.
That's the way it works.
It's not going to happen, but
no,
we'll promote it.
It's a hell of an idea.
All right, buddy, we'll do it tomorrow.
Later.
Ray on Overdrive is brought to you by Valiant Financial. For fast approvals and competitive payment options on heavy equipment from any dealer, visit valiantfinancial.ca.